Book 5, Chapter 1. Lucius Domitius and Appius Claudius being consuls, Caesar, when departing from his winter quarters into Italy, as he had been accustomed to do yearly, commands the lieutenants whom he appointed over the legions to take care that during the winter as many ships as possible should be built, and the old repaired. He plans the size and shape of them. For dispatch of lading, and for drawing them on shore, he makes them a little lower than those which we have been accustomed to use in our sea, and that so much the more, because he knew that on account of the frequent changes of the tide, less swells occurred there, for the purpose of transporting little and a great number of horses, he makes them a little broader than those which we use in other seas. All these he orders to be constructed for lightness and expedition, to which object their lowness contributes greatly. He orders those things which are necessary for equipping ships to be brought thither from Spain. He himself, on the assizes of Hither Gaul being concluded, proceeds into Illyricum, because he heard that the part of the province nearest them was being laid waste by the incursions of the Pyrrhusti. When he had arrived there, he levies soldiers upon the states, and orders them to assemble at an appointed place. Which circumstance having been reported to them, the Pyrrhusti send ambassadors to him to inform him that no part of those proceedings was done by public deliberation, and assert that they were ready to make compensation by all means for the injuries inflicted. Caesar, accepting their defense, demands hostages, and orders them to be brought to him on a specified day, and assures them that unless they did so, he would visit their state with war. These being brought to him on the day which he had ordered, he appoints arbitrators between the states, who should estimate the damages and determine the reparation. Chapter 2. These things being finished, and the assizes being concluded, he returns into Hither Gaul, and proceeds thence to the army. When he had arrived there, having made a survey of the winter quarter, he finds that by the extraordinary ardor of the soldiers, amidst the utmost scarcity of all materials, about 600 ships of that kind which we have described above, and 28 ships of war, had been built, and were not far from the state where they might be launched in a few days. Having commended the soldiers and those who had presided over the work, he informs them what he wishes to be done, and orders all the ships to assemble at Port Aetius, from which port he had learned that the passage into Britain was shortest, being only about 30 miles from the continent. He left what seemed a sufficient amount of soldiers for that design. He himself proceeds into the territories of the Treveri with 4 legions without baggage, and 800 horse, because they neither came to the general diets of Gaul, or obeyed his commands, and were, moreover, said to be tampering with the Germans beyond the Rhine. Chapter 3. This state is by far the most powerful of all Gaul in cavalry, and has great forces of infantry, and as we have remarked above, borders on the Rhine. In that state, 2 persons, Indutio Marus and King Getorix, were then contending with each other for the supreme power, one of whom, as soon as the arrival of Caesar and his legions was known, came to him, assures him that he and all his party would continue in their allegiance, and not revolt from the alliance of the Roman people, and informs him of the things which were going on against the Treveri. But Indutio Marus began to collect cavalry and infantry, and make preparations for war, having concealed those who by reason of their age could not be under arms in the forest Arduena, which is of immense size, and extends from the Rhine across the country of the Treveri to the frontiers of the Remi. But after that, some of the chief persons of the state, both influenced by their friendship for King Getorix, and alarmed at the arrival of our army, came to Caesar and began to solicit him privately about their own interests, since they could not provide for the safety of the state. Indutio Marius, dreading lest he should be abandoned by all, sends ambassadors to Caesar, to declare that he absented himself from his countrymen, and refrained from coming to him on this account, that he might the more easily keep the state in its allegiance, lest on the departure of all the nobility the commonalty should, in their indiscretion, revolt. And thus the whole state was at his control, and that he, if Caesar would permit, would come to the camp to him, and would commit his own fortunes and those of the state to his good faith. Chapter 4. Caesar, though he discerned from what motive these things were said, and what circumstance deterred him from his meditated plan, still, in order that he might not be compelled to waste the summer amongst the Treveri, while all things were prepared for the war with Britain, ordered Indutiomarus to come to him with 200 hostages. When these were brought, and among them his son and near relations whom he had demanded by name, he consoled Indutiomarus, and enjoined him to continue in his allegiance. Yet, nevertheless, summoning to him the chief men of the Treviri, he reconciled them individually to King Getarix. This he both thought should be done by him in justice to the merits of the latter, and also judged that it was of great importance that the influence of one whose singular attachment towards him he had fully seen should prevail as much as possible among his people. Indutiomarus was very much offended at this act, seeing that his influence was diminished among his countrymen, and he, who already before had borne a hostile mind toward us, was much more violently inflamed against us through resentment at this. Chapter 5. These matters being settled, Kaiser went to Port Aetius with the legions. There he discovers that 40 ships which had been built in the country of the Meldi, having been driven back by a storm, had been unable to maintain their course, and had returned to the same port from which they had set out. He finds the rest ready for sailing, and furnished with everything. In the same place, the cavalry of the whole of Gaul, in number 4,000, assembles, and also the chief persons of all the states. He had determined to leave in Gaul a very few of them, whose fidelity towards him he had clearly discerned, and take the rest with him as hostages, because he feared a commotion in Gaul when he should be absent. Chapter 6. There was, together with the others, Dumnorix the Aeduan, of whom we had made previous mention. Him in particular he had resolved to have with him, because he had discovered him to be fond of change, fond of power, possessing great resolution and great influence among the Gauls. To this was added that Dumnorix had before said in an assembly of Aeduans that the sovereignty of the state had been made over to him by Kaiser, which speech the Aedui bore with impatience and yet dared not send ambassadors to Kaiser for the purpose of either rejecting or deprecating that appointment. That fact Kaiser had learned from his own personal friends. He at first strove to obtain by every entreaty that he should be left in Gaul, partly because, being unaccustomed to sailing, he feared the sea, partly because he said he was prevented by divine admonitions. After he saw that this request was firmly refused him, all hope of success being lost, he began to tamper with the chief persons of the Gauls, to call them apart singly and exhort them to remain on the continent, to agitate them with the fear that it was not without reason that Gaul should be stripped of all her nobility, that it was Kaiser's design to bring over to Britain and put to death all those whom he feared to slay in the sight of Gaul, to pledge his honor to the rest, to ask for their oath that they would by common deliberation execute what they should perceive to be necessary for Gaul. These things were reported to Kaiser by several persons. Chapter 7. Having learned this fact, Kaiser, because he had conferred so much honor upon the Aeduan state, determined that Dumnorix should be restrained and deterred by whatever means he could, and that, because he perceived his insane designs to be proceeding further and further, care should be taken lest he might be able to injure him, and the Commonwealth. Therefore, having stayed about 25 days in that place, because the north wind, which usually blows a great part of every season, prevented the voyage, he exerted himself to keep Dumnorix in his allegiance, and nevertheless learn all his measures. Having at length met with favorable weather, he orders the foot soldiers and the horse to embark in the ships. But, while the minds of all were occupied, Dumnorix began to take his departure from the camp homewards with the cavalry of the Aedui, Kaiser being ignorant of it. Kaiser, on this matter being reported to him, ceasing from his expedition and deferring all other affairs, sends a great part of the cavalry to pursue him, and commands that he be brought back. He orders that if he use violence and do not submit, that he be slain, considering that Dumnorix would do nothing as a rational man while he himself was absent, since he had disregarded his command even when present. He, however, when recalled, began to resist and defend himself with his hand, and implore the support of his people, often exclaiming that he was free and the subject of a free state. They surround and kill the man as they had been commanded, but the Aeduan horsemen all returned to Kaiser. Chapter 8. When these things were done, and Labienus, left on the continent with 3 legions and 2,000 horse to defend the harbors and provide corn, and discover what was going on in Gaul, and take measures according to the occasion and according to the circumstance, he himself, with 5 legions and a number of horse, equal to that which he was leaving on the continent, set sail at sunset, and though for a time borne forward by a gentle southwest wind, he did not maintain his course, in consequence of the wind dying away about midnight, and being carried on too far by the tide, when the sun arose, espied Britain passed on his left. Then again, following the change of tide, he urged on with the oars that he might make that port of the island in which he had discovered the preceding summer that there was the best landing place. And in this affair the spirit of our soldiers was very much to be extolled, for they, with the transports and heavy ships, the labor of rowing not being for a moment discontinued, equaled the speed of the ships of war. All the ships reached Britain nearly at midday, nor was there seen a single enemy in that place. But, as Kaiser afterwards found from some prisoners, though large bodies of troops had assembled there, yet being alarmed by the great number of our ships, more than 800 of which, including the ships of the preceding year, and those private vessels which each had built for his own convenience, had appeared at one time, they had quitted the coast and concealed themselves among the higher points. Chapter 9. Kaiser, having disembarked his army and chosen a convenient place for the camp, when he discovered from the prisoners in what part the forces of the enemy had lodged themselves, having left 10 cohorts and 300 horse at the sea to be a guard to the ships, hastens to the enemy at the 3rd watch, fearing the less for the ships for this reason, because he was leaving them fastened at anchor upon an even and open shore, and he placed Q. Atreus over the guard of the ships. He himself, having advanced by night about 12 miles, espied the forces of the enemy. They, advancing to the river with their cavalry and chariots from the higher ground, began to annoy our men and give battle. Being repulsed by our cavalry, they concealed themselves in the woods, as they had secured a place admirably fortified by nature and by art, which, as it seemed, they had before prepared on account of a civil war, for all entrances to it were shut up by a great number of felled trees. They themselves rushed out of the woods to fight here and there, and prevented our men from entering their fortifications. But the soldiers of the 7th Legion, having formed a testudo and thrown up a rampart against the fortification, took the place and drove them out of the woods, receiving only a few wounds. But Kaiser forbade his men to pursue them in their flight any great distance, both because he was ignorant of the nature of the ground, and because, as a great part of the day was spent, he wished time to be left for the fortification of the camp. Chapter 10. The next day, early in the morning, he sent both foot soldiers and horse in 3 divisions on an expedition to pursue those who had fled. These having advanced a little way, when already the rear of the enemy was in sight, some horse came to Kaiser from Quintus Atreus to report that the preceding night, a very great storm having arisen, almost all the ships were dashed to pieces and cast upon the shore, because neither the anchors and cables could resist, nor could the sailors and pilots sustain the violence of the storm, and thus great damage was received by that collision of the ships. Chapter 11. These things being known to him, Kaiser orders the legions and cavalry to be recalled and to cease from their march. He himself returns to the ships. He sees clearly before him almost the same things which he had heard of from the messengers and by letter, so that, about 40 ships being lost, the remainder seemed capable of being repaired with much labor. Therefore, he selects workmen from the legions, and orders others to be sent for from the continent. He writes to Labienus to build as many ships as he could with those legions which were with him. He himself, though the matter was one of great difficulty and labor, yet thought it to be the most expedient for all the ships to be brought up on shore and joined with the camp by 1 fortification. In these matters he employed about 10 days, the labor of the soldiers being unremitting even during the hours of night. The ships having been brought up on shore and the camp strongly fortified, he left the same forces which he did before as a guard for the ships. He sets out in person for the same place that he had returned from. When he had come thither, great forces of the Britons had already assembled at that place, the chief command and management of a war having been entrusted to Cassivellaunus, whose territories a river which is called the Thames, separates from the maritime states at about 80 miles from the sea. At an earlier period, perpetual wars had taken place between him and the other states. But, greatly alarmed by our arrival, the Britons had placed him over the whole war and the conduct of it. Chapter 12. The interior portion of Britain is inhabited by those of whom they say that it is handed down by tradition that they were born in the island itself. The maritime portion by those who had passed over from the country of the Belgae for the purpose of plunder and making war, almost all of whom were called by the names of those states from which they sprung, they went thither, and, having waged war, continued there and began to cultivate the lands. The number of the people is countless, and their buildings exceedingly numerous, for the most part very like those of the Gauls. The number of cattle is great. They use either brass or iron rings, determined at a certain weight as their money. Tin is produced in the midland regions, in the maritime iron, but the quantity of it is small. They employ brass, which is imported. There, as in Gaul, is timber of every description, except beech and fir. They do not regard it lawful to eat the hare, and the cock, and the goose. They, however, breed them for amusement and pleasure. The climate is more temperate than in Gaul, the colds being less severe. Chapter 13. The island is triangular in its form, and one of its sides is opposite to Gaul. One angle of this side, which is in Kent, whither almost all ships from Gaul are directed, looks to the east. The lower looks to the south. This side extends about 500 miles. Another side lies towards Spain in the west, on which part is Ireland, less, as is reckoned, than Britain by one half. But the passage from it into Britain is of equal distance with that from Gaul. In the middle of this voyage is an island, which is called Mona. Many smaller islands besides are supposed to lie there, of which islands some have written that at the time of the winter solstice it is night there for 30 consecutive days. We, in our inquiries about that matter, ascertained nothing, except that by accurate measurements with water we perceived the nights to be shorter there than on the continent. The length of this side, as their account states, is 700 miles. The third side is towards the north, to which portion of the island no land is opposite, but an angle of that side looks principally towards Germany. This side is considered to be 800 miles in length. Thus, the whole island is about 2,000 miles in circumference. Chapter 14. The most civilized of all these nations are they who inhabit Kent, which is entirely a maritime district, nor do they differ much from the Gallic customs. Most of the inland inhabitants do not sow corn, but live on milk and flesh, and are clad with skins. All the Britons, indeed, dye themselves with woad, which occasions a bluish color, and thereby have a more terrible appearance in fight. They wear their hair long, and have every part of their body shaved except their head and upper lip. 10 and even 12 have wives common to them, and particularly brothers among brothers, and parents among their children. But if there are any issue by these wives, they are reputed to be the children of those by whom respectively each was first espoused when a virgin. Chapter 15. The horse and charioteers of the enemy contended vigorously in a skirmish with our cavalry on the march, yet so that our men were conquerors in all parts, and drove them to the woods and hills. But, having slain a great many, they pursued too eagerly and lost some of their men. But the enemy, after some time had elapsed, when our men were off their guard and occupied in the fortification of the camp, rushed out of the woods, and, making an attack upon those who were placed on duty before the camp, fought in a determined manner. And two cohorts, being sent by Kaiser to their relief, and these severally the first of two legions, when these had taken up their position at a very small distance from each other, as our men were disconcerted by the unusual mode of battle, the enemy broke through the middle of them most courageously, and retreated thence in safety. That day, Q. Liberius Durus, a tribune of the soldiers, was slain. The enemy, since more cohorts were sent against them, were repulsed.